Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern, and the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan, and so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20, capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you like this podcast, you will love my new anthology called Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. Check it out, and you'll hear from 49 authors about all sorts of things moms don't have time to do. All the authors have been on this podcast. Also, check out my TikTok, @withZibbyandTracy, my other podcast, Sex Talk with Zibby and Tracy. Check out Moms Don't Have Time to Write on Medium. And of course, my new publishing company called Zibby Books. And now back to our daily author interview site and a quick hello from some of my kids.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Enjoy the show. If you like this podcast, you will love my new anthology called Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. Here's a little snippet by one of the authors from the anthology.
My name is Shelley R. Johannes, and I'm so excited I got to contribute to Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids anthology. My essay, I Am Not Broken, Today I'm Okay, is about dealing with chronic illness. What I really don't have time for is getting sick so that I can binge Netflix and hide in bed.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I hope you're all having an amazing, amazing day filled with lots of food and joy and friends and family and whatever you are thankful for coming to the fore. So thanks for tuning in to this episode, these episodes about Thanksgiving-themed books. Denise Kiernan is the author of We Gather Together, A Nation Divided, A President in Turmoil, and A Historic Campaign to Embrace Gratitude and Grace. Denise is an author, journalist, and producer. Her latest book, We Gather Together, arrived in winter 2020, and her last book, The Last Castle, September 2017, was an instant New York Times bestseller in both hardcover and paperback, and was also a Wall Street Journal bestseller. She's also the author of The Girls of Atomic City, which is a New York Times, Los Angeles Times, and NPR bestseller, and has been published in multiple languages. She lives in North Carolina. We actually did not talk about The Girls of Atomic City or the other ones because I was so focused on this book. So sorry about that. Welcome, Denise. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss We Gather Together, A Nation Divided, A President in Turmoil, and A Historic Campaign to Embrace Gratitude and Grace. How'd I do?
Perfect.
Dramatic reading.
No, that was great. And you know, it's funny, as a writer, you know, sometimes the whole subtitle thing becomes this like giant group thing. Yeah. And you know, sometimes to remember my own subtitles, I literally have to pick up the book. And so you did great. You were fabulous.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Okay. Can you please tell listeners what your book is about?
Yes. So my book, We Gather Together, is a really a new way to look at giving thanks and the holiday we have come to know as Thanksgiving. And it's sort of, there are three elements to the book in my mind. There is the evolution of this holiday we've come to know as Thanksgiving, going from, you know, way, way, way back on other continents, all the way up through the 21st century. Then there is the story of this amazing woman, Sarah Josepha Hale, and the Civil War, and how this woman lobbied to make Thanksgiving an established, codified celebration that would take place the same day every year throughout the country, which it wasn't prior to her efforts. And then the third part is really, to me, what the linchpin of this entire book is, and that is about gratitude. And just the core element of all of this is gratitude. And thanks to the last 10, 20 years, we now have this incredible amount of research about how important a gratitude practice is, not just for how you feel. And, you know, we've all heard gratitude journals and things like that, but also there is neuroscientific evidence now that it is good for your emotional health, your physical health, your blood pressure, you know, all of these sorts of things. So to me, the gratitude piece was a really, really important part of this.
I was really fascinated by this aspiring author turned mom turned
oh my gosh
crusader piece of the puzzle. I didn't even know. I mean, this is embarrassing to say. Maybe I shouldn't even say that. I didn't even know who she was, and I didn't know her story ahead of time.
No, it's not embarrassing to say. I mean, what's funny is when you do one of my first really big, you know, really big books that took off was The Girls of Atomic City, which is about these women who were working on the Manhattan Project without their knowledge. And people would say the same thing to me. They'd come up and say, I feel so bad. I didn't know about this. I was like, I didn't know about this till, you know, I came across it and then started looking more deeply into it. So yeah, I had learned about Sarah Josepha Hale, this, you know, widowed mother of five who becomes basically the most powerful editor in the United States of America in the 19th century. I didn't know much about her, came across her, and I thought, I have to keep looking into this woman, but I didn't just want to do a biography of her because it's just, I just don't write biographies. So that's, I had to wait till the other pieces that I just described kind of came together. But I did know that I wanted her to be, you know, a real part of this story because she is fascinating. And you read about Sarah Josepha Hale's life, not just her lobbying to establish Thanksgiving, but her life as an editor, her life as a fundraiser, her life as
a poet.
Oh, of a little something we know as Mary Had a Little Lamb, which, you know, really caught on. As, you know, this is a woman who helped popularize Christmas trees in the United States. This is a woman who said women should wear white when they get married. This is somebody who helped introduce the word lingerie to American readers, who was one of the first publishers of Edgar Allan Poe. I mean, this is someone who was like the OG influencer, right? I mean, if she were alive today, she would have a gazillion Instagram followers. Everybody would be looking to her about not just what to wear, but what to read and, you know, all of these sorts of things. But one of the greatest things about her is that she used so much of her influence to raise up others mm-hmm. and to bring attention to other people's work. And so again, that she embodied a lot of the gratitude and grace that I was hoping this whole book would be able to capture.
What did you set out to do with this book? Like, was this it start as I want to do something about Thanksgiving in general? Or did it start with, I found this amazing character? Or did it start with, like, what was happening in your life that made it a book?
That made it a book. No, that's a great question, because as a writer, I always have to go with my curiosity. So these books stay in our lives for a while. So you have to have a topic that just kind of grabs you. But writing is also so much about what you don't want to say or don't need to say as much as what you do want to say and do need to say. And the don't part can be tricky sometimes because you kind of want to shoehorn everything in there. What I wanted to do was present my curiosity about Hale was massive. Her partnering essentially with Abraham Lincoln to establish a day of thanks in the middle of the Civil War. I mean, you want to talk about a time when it's hard to get everybody to kind of come together and get on board. You know, that fascinated me. So I knew I wanted to say something about that. But I also knew I wanted to look at where we have come as a country with this particular holiday and how it has evolved over time and how it can continue to evolve, I think. So I really wanted to present an entirely new Thanksgiving story in a way, an accurate one, one that's based in fact, and one that I think is kind of inspirational and inclusive and that can sort of take us, you know, in a new, more inclusive, wonderful, gratitude-centered direction with the holiday. And as I talk about in the beginning of the book, you know, I love Thanksgiving. It is easily my favorite holiday. But you know, I wanted to feel good about Thanksgiving. And there are so many wonderful, inspirational stories and fascinating stories related to this holiday over time and throughout history. And I just really wanted to share that with folks and, you know, have just kind of zero in on that thank you part of Thanksgiving, which is something that everybody can get behind. It really is a unifying idea.
Totally agree. Yes. And the food doesn't hurt.
And the food does not hurt. And boy, did she like writing about food. Oh my gosh. So in addition to all of, you know, her editing and everything, she wrote a novel. She has almost an entire chapter dedicated to a Thanksgiving meal and how you should set the table. Like Martha Stewart stepped aside, you know, and I love Martha. But I mean, this woman was all about it in the 19th century and would share it with her readers and give, you know, hosting suggestions and, you know, just in the magazine as well as in books she wrote. It was incredible. And I love that too. I cook a lot. I mean, I cook throughout the year, but it's a massive Thanksgiving. I really get into my Thanksgiving for sure.
Do you have a favorite dish?
Is gravy a dish? I think gravy can be a dish,
It may well be.
let's just say I make gravy a dish. Yes. Gravy to me is, if gratitude is what brings this entire book together, gravy is what brings the entire Thanksgiving meal together for me. I also really like cranberry sauce. I've made the same cranberry sauce for years now. It's a tweak on an old Bon Appetit recipe. It's cranberry Zinfandel sauce. As long as the Zin is there while you're cooking, you know, you put a little in this cranberry sauce, put a little in me, and it's delicious. And I actually like when the gravy interacts with the cranberry sauce. It makes me very excited. And my favorite gravy right now that I've made the last couple years is a Madeira gravy. There's a theme here. There's a theme here. It's delicious. It's just so delicious. Anyway, don't get me started on gravy. I know.
I feel like I just want to hear you talk about food. This is like, it's like lunchtime. I'm like, tell me more about it.
that's one of the things that was so wonderful about, you know, writing this very uplifting book about, you know, Thanksgiving during the Spanish flu and how they handled it. Yes. When I wrote that and when I titled the book, We Gather Together, all that, this was done before COVID. Mm-hmm. So when I was going back and editing and copy editing with my publisher, all of a sudden, you know, the phrase social distancing is taking off while I'm editing a book called We Gather Together. And the section on Thanksgiving during the Spanish flu took on this whole other level of meaning. And the idea of trying to find things to be thankful for when times are going really, 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 really badly became all the more important to me. So it was... it was such a unique experience as a writer because, you know, as you know, when you conceive of something, you get the idea for it. The world is, your life is in one particular place. As you're writing it, your life is in another place. As you're promoting it and the book is out in the world, that world may look very different than the world in which you came up with this idea for a book. And the life of a book is very different, which is why sometimes you can, it's so fun to pick up a book you read a long time ago and see how it affects you differently. It's like, you know, you can't step into the same river twice. You can't read the same book twice, really, kind of, because you bring so much of yourself to it. And you do that as a writer and you do that as a reader. So, but boy, did the world change between between the time that I, like, you know, was writing this book and then, you know, was out in the world talking about it. It was, it was quite an experience.
I interviewed somebody else during the pandemic and her book, oh my gosh, I'm going to blank on her, on the name of her, but it was all about gathering. I thought it was called Gathering. I have to look it up. I'll send it to you.
That sounds familiar. So I'd love to see that.
Anyway, but it doesn't matter. But I loved your point about rereading books and how we bring different things. Because often authors say things like, well, it's not my book anymore. I've put it out into the world. It's yours to interpret and do what you will with it in your mind. But yes, I've also had the sensation. I had this one book that I read in college. And for years, I would tell everybody it was my favorite book. It was called Drinking, A Love Story. And I guess I was just like drinking too much back then or something. Anyway, I reread it recently and I was like, I mean, it's really good. And I love Caroline Knapp and she's a fabulous author. And I was so sad when she passed away, even though I didn't even know her, but it didn't hit me hard the way it had before. And it just made me think like, what was going on in my mind so much at the time that this was the book that I felt I needed right then. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yes. Oh yeah. Because books come into your life. They're like little people. I mean, they come into your life at different times for different reasons. I mean, I remember one of the first times I love William Faulkner. One of the first times I read Faulkner, I was 14 and it was for English class because my English teacher was obsessed with him. She had a Faulkner sweatshirt. What the nerd in me, I would give for a Faulkner sweatshirt today. But we, you know, we used to love to tease her. And I went back and read Faulkner, you know, like 7 years later, like right at like the summer, right after I graduated college. And I thought, oh my God, this man is amazing. And it was just interesting. Now, obviously there's a big difference between a 14-year-old and a 21-year-old, but it was one of those times when I thought it's really interesting and always worth it to kind of go back to those that you really, really like and give them another read and see how they affect you for sure. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, "This is so exciting."
So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
Of course, that's not helping book sales much, but you know.
I know. That's, I mean, that's what they're saying. They're like, oh, I'm fine. I'm going to reread War and Peace. No, go buy books. get out and go. Yeah, I know. But you know, our house, it's just a library. It's everywhere. I love them. They're wonderful, such wonderful objects. And
where do you live when you're not out on the road?
Yes, when I'm not in the Hampton Inn, I live in Asheville, North Carolina.
Ah,
which is a lovely place. And I was in New York City for many years, cut my teeth at the Village Voice and lived in New York City for a long time, lived in Rome for a while, where I struggled to find cranberries as I talk about in the book, which was terrifying for me. But yeah, I live in Asheville, North Carolina. It's in the western part of North Carolina in the mountains. And it's lovely. It's a big creative community, a lot of writers. Yeah, Ron Rash lives there. Charles Frazier, who wrote a little something called Cold Mountain. Charles lives there. Elizabeth Kostova lives there. I mean, there are a lot of writers there, a lot of creatives, a lot of musicians, a lot of artists.
My husband is a producer and he has like a music arm of his business. And yes. His buddy Dan just met, now I'm remembering this whole thing, met Leslie at my book party. Anyway. Yes.
Yes. And so Leslie connected Dan and I and said, you know, Dan and Anna, you guys have to hang out with Denise and Joe. My husband, Joe, is also a writer. You guys all have to hang out in Asheville. And it was actually a classic. I love that Leslie brought us together because she's just lovely that way. But it was a classic Asheville moment, really. I mean, it's one of those places that is its own center of the universe in a sense. You know, it's really interesting how many times I'll mention it and somebody will say, oh my God, a friend of mine just moved there. Or, oh my God, a friend of mine was, just, you know, it's a good spot. Have you been?
I have not.
You gotta come down.
Yeah.
You gotta come down. Gotta come see Biltmore House.
I would love to. Who knows?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what are you working on now, by the way?
Well, actually related to this, next year, a picture book titled We Give Thanks is going to come out. That is going to be a kind of a new Thanksgiving, nonfiction Thanksgiving story for very young people. Mm-hmm. And also adapting We Gather Together for middle grade readers as well. So if a family wants to do a family read, the parents can have the adult version of We Gather Together that you just held up. And then, you know, the middle schoolers can have their young reader edition. And then the little ones can have a little picture book. So I'm really excited about that. The picture book's done. So I just saw some sketches, which is really exciting. But I'm researching my next sort of big narrative nonfiction book, which is tentatively titled Obstinate Daughters.
Ooh, and I love that.
Yeah, and that comes from a colonial era newspaper cartoon from across the pond. They were talking about the difficulty that England, the crown, was having taking the Charleston area and Sullivan's Island in particular. So this cartoon they put in the paper was a woman's head in profile, and her hair was up, you know, very elegantly, but in her hair were cannons and muskets and all of these sorts of things. And it said, Miss Carolina Sullivan, obstinate daughter of the colonies, or something like that. And it was really, really cool. And so I'm basically looking at pre-colonial and colonial era Unite America, but through the eyes of women, people of color, and indigenous peoples, and sort of kind of retelling the story of the founding of America from that perspective. And then I myself, as an obstinate daughter, am going through and retracing some of their footsteps and looking at what their legacy is like today. So there is going to be this travelogue thread to it. So I'm really excited about it, actually.
I love that. I can see that being a very funny gift too.
Yeah.
Funny gift book. I have lots of people I would give that to. History aside, I'm sure it's going to be amazingly well-written, but even, title alone.
That's right. Title alone.
So what advice would you have for aspiring authors?
The advice I always give, and people feel like they've heard it before, but I'm still challenged following it. So I always feel like it's valid to share. Allow yourself to write a really crappy first draft. Mm-hmm. And it is so hard not to edit yourself while you're going through things. And I really honestly believe that you have got to give yourself permission to write a really bad first draft so that you get it done. And then the really fun part begins, revising and tweaking and shaping. And, I try to think of writing as like a skeleton, like get the bones down, mm-hmm. Then go back through, put a layer of skin on, then, go back through for another pass. I usually like to do about three passes before I turn it into an editor. And, dress it up a little, but not too much. And then, as you're finalizing things, you do what Coco Chanel supposedly always did. It's like, look in the mirror and the first thing that catches your eye, take it off, because it's probably a little bit too much. So you got to then go pare down. So you get the bones, get the skin that holds it all together, dress it up, and then Coco Chanel it. That's my approach to writing and revising and editing and in all seriousness, also be careful about when you share your work. Write every day and be careful when you share your work and with whom you share your work. You want people who are going to be honest with you, but that have your best interests at heart. And that is it is a harder thing to find than you might realize. And it's okay to have a good, strong critique. I get nervous if I don't get a good, strong critique. I want things to be better. But that critique needs to come from a place of really wanting the best for you as a writer and for your work. And just keep at it every day.
And judging from your cooking ingredients, perhaps add some wine while you do it.
And yes. I actually don't. That is, I will drink while I cook. I do not drink while I write.
Okay.
I can't do it. I gotta. Also, I am one of those wake up first thing in the morning and write people, which I don't tell people they have to do that because I think everybody gets into their own routine and has their own way of doing things. And as long as you're doing it consistently and it's working for you, do that. Don't, let anybody else or someone like me say you have to write in the morning. I like writing in the morning because it's before all the, ping and ding and email and all that stuff starts to get in my head. And I have the purest relationship with the work before all of the rest of life kicks in. So that's what I would say. Be nice to yourself. It's hard to be nice to yourself as a writer sometimes, but try and be nice to yourself. That's try. Try.
Awesome. Well, I will be thinking of you having your gravy and, cranberry sauce while I dig into my 18 servings of mashed sweet potatoes with marshmallows on top.
Yes.
I put this corn syrup to
get the gravy through the day. That's also very good with gravy. You got to slap some gravy on top of those marshmallows. It goes with everything.
Yeah.
It binds the meal together. I'll make sure to put I'll post some on Instagram. I'll be sure to post some Thanksgiving.
You should start just bottling up your gravy. You could do a side business. You could actually sell a bottle of gravy with the book as a little promotion. Not a bad idea.
That would next be year. Awesome. Yes. That's
paperback.
That's right.
Paperback rollout.
Paperback. The gravy edition. Yeah.
Yes. Gravy train. Okay. All right. Take care, Denise. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Zubi. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram @Zubi Owens and @Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also, sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.